From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I don't think that it's very attractive for anybody in Illinois, where wages are higher, where the standard of living is higher, and where we do provide health care for people who are in need.
Well, that's Governor J.B. Pritzker responding after a Republican Indiana lawmaker makes a play for some Illinois counties. Top Democrats here are together in their opposition, but are they getting along with each other on other topics? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, glad to have her back, is Shea Kappas. She is a national politics reporter with Politico, and she writes the Illinois Playbook. Shea, good to have you along with us again.
Thank you so much for letting me come on with the veterans. Charlie, you know, I'm bowing my head now. Hello, Charlie.
He is the A-team, that's for sure. So Shea, Indiana, you know, we don't get to talk about that much on this show. We don't follow what's going on there too often. But the Speaker of the Indiana House, Todd Houston, filing a measure to create a commission that would look into changing boundaries for the state. And the bottom line, he's talking about it could bring in some willing Illinois voters over to his state. That follows more downstate counties passing these secession referendums that, while they're advisory, they do signal maybe some disenchantment with these folks in downstate Illinois, in a state that is led by Chicago Democrats. So Houston says he's serious about this idea. Should we take him seriously?
Well, I think he's serious. He's very measured. Houston is not, you know, a gadfly out there doing crazy stuff. People take him very seriously. And when I talked to him, he was totally serious about this. It seems outlandish on the Illinois side, knowing that, you know, the Democratic governor and Democratic-controlled General Assembly is not going to let this happen. And so that's why you saw House Speaker, you know, Emmanuel Chris Welch call it a stunt. J.B. Pritzker called it a stunt. Maybe it is a stunt, but it is something that the Indiana folks are taking seriously. So it'll be fun to watch. And I'm curious, you know, how all of the counties are going to respond. I haven't talked to folks there. There are 7 counties that voted on this, but there are 33 counties, you know, over the past year, I think, who have talked about it. So it is something that's out there. Conservative counties in other states have been talking about this. Out west, there are counties that want to go into Idaho, for example. So it's sort of a trend nationally when people are dissatisfied with how their state government is operating.
Now, Charlie, I guess it's nothing new for people to be dissatisfied, and especially as you get farther downstate, southern Illinois, deep southern Illinois in some cases, because you're so far away from Chicago, and that is the focal point for what goes on in the state of Illinois. It's where the political leadership is at. But in this case, you don't put much stock into this whole thing, and as far as the Indiana speaker goes, you think, again, it's sort of making a mountain out of a molehill?
Yeah, I think it's probably more accurately said, it's making Mount Everest out of an anthill, because it's more likely that I will be the next coach of the Chicago Bears than that this is ever going to go anywhere. And part of it is the Indiana Constitution lays out what the boundaries are. So Speaker Houston would have to change his own constitution, and his legislation says that there's going to be this commission appointed to study this, and it's going to have 5 people appointed by Indiana's governor, 5 people appointed by Illinois' governor, and a quorum has to have 3 from each state. Well, J.B. Pritzker is not going to appoint anybody, so it's going to be dead in the water. And people talk about how, well, there's these 33 counties out of 102 that want to get out of Illinois. And as you said earlier, you guys, most of them are downstate. I think almost all of them are south of Springfield. From my experience watching, they're the same folks who complain that their tax dollars all go to Chicago, and that's what the local politicians run on. And in reality, Chicago breaks about even. It puts in about as much as it gets back from the state. The suburbs and the collar counties put in a lot more than they get back. Downstate particularly southern Illinois, puts a lot less in than it gets back. And I actually went through and looked at these 33 counties. I looked at their population, added it all up. Together, all of them are roughly 828,000 people in the counties that have passed referendum to secede from Illinois. And that's about 6.5% of Illinois' total population of roughly 12.8 million as of the 2020 census. And out of those counties, there's only six of them that have more than 30,000 population, and there's several of them that don't even have 10,000 population. So it's the you look at the geography and say, oh my gosh, all these counties, 33, that's a lot. Yeah, but they tend to be small. They don't have any people living there. And the only one that's actually got, could be considered an urban county is Madison County. That's part of the Metro East area. So I don't see this going anywhere. It's something for local politicians who want to appeal to the folks who think they're getting ripped off by Chicago, which has been a, as long as I've been watching state government, this has been a constant complaint from downstate folks. But as I say, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, Shia, why, like Charlie said, this feeling, I grew up in the southern part of the state, and that feeling has been there, like I said, as long as I can remember. So why is this movement sort of gained steam in recent years? What's led to this level of dissatisfaction that people actually think to themselves, I'd like to leave Illinois?
Well, I wonder if Charlie's done, like, have you looked to see whether they're MAGA Republicans? I would guess Trump Republicans are behind a lot of this sentiment. And that's why we're seeing it, you know, pop up in recent years, just as his, you know, ascendancy to the Republican Party came about. I can see how people have become more vocal as he has become a more predominant player in politics. It'll be interesting what happens in 4 years when he's out. Will we hear less about that? I don't know. Probably not, because there are so many budget problems in the state that will fuel maybe some of this discussion. Who knows?
And I think part of the problem, too, goes back to changes that we made even before Donald Trump was on the scene. One of the things that we did, we got away with cumulative voting, which basically guaranteed that there would be at least one Democrat and one Republican from every legislative district. So when I started out as a reporter 50-some years ago, there were Democrats from all over southern Illinois. And then as the economy changed, as coal mines closed, laid off people, as unions became less powerful, as people left the rural areas to go to the urban areas, and as we did away with cumulative voting and the gerrymandering of the districts that the Democrats have controlled, oh gosh, basically since 1990, I take it back, since 2000, this has made the folks in southern Illinois and basically outside the metro Chicago area, except for a few urban places, the Democrats really don't have much of a foothold. And so those changes have been going on for a long time. And I'm not sure how that will be corrected, if you want to look at it that way, or how that's going to evolve.
I would say, and I think rural Illinois has been harder hit by the economy, and, you know, people are upset, and they, you know, they're going to blame the people who are in office for what's happening, and that's kind of the disconnect that the large Democratic Party is having to deal with right now. You know, were we not listening to the people that we used to represent all those years? We thought we had them, and apparently we weren't listening. So you're seeing lots of hand-wringing and trying to figure out what the messaging should have been, and whether Democrats should have been listening better to what they were hearing from those communities.
So, Shia, this got its 15 minutes of fame, maybe, here over this last week. Is this all we're going to hear about it, or is it going to be something maybe during the legislative sessions coming up in both states that we may start hearing more discussion? This may linger out there during that period.
I would imagine Illinois, we won't hear anything from the Illinois legislature about it. However, I'm going to check in with Indiana to see where this bill is going, how it, what people are saying about it. So we'll be, at media, we'll be writing about it, where it goes. I can't believe it would go very far. And what if it does go far? What would happen even if it passed in Indiana? Charlie knows better. I mean, it would just stop, right? I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, Charlie, I'm guessing this is going to be a one-sided type of news story over the next several months.
Yeah, and as we mentioned earlier, the legislation itself says that it's a by state, I guess you would call a commission, equal numbers from Illinois and from Indiana, and to have a quorum, the Illinois people have to be there. And if the Illinois governor doesn't appoint anybody to this commission, end of the story. And as I say earlier, there's no way on earth I can imagine J.B. Pritzker is going to appoint five people to go to Indiana and talk about how we can lose some of our counties to the Hoosier state.
Well, let's turn our attention to the Illinois General Assembly. Democrats are back in control. They were just sworn in once again, the same leadership, but leadership was confirmed once again here this month. And Democrats, again, having firm control of the General Assembly, super majorities in both chambers. But things are not always rosy. And Shia, you've written about this in the in your newsletter. It is certainly something that we have watched a little bit of cracks in the relationships at times. The House Speaker, Chris Welch, Governor J.B. Pritzker seem to have a little bit of a fractious time here over this last month. What's going on between the two of them? Are they getting along? Is this going to be something that we need to watch?
It's definitely something that we need to watch. I think they are on the same page, but they are not talking. As of when I spoke to Speaker Welch earlier in the week, they had not spoken since that kerfuffle they had over the hemp bill, where Governor Pritzker, his team thought they had the votes in the Democratic caucus to pass a bill that would regulate hemp and, keep some of these dangerous chemicals in it from being put in products and sold in stores around the state. But the measure did not have the 60 votes that Welch likes to see before he sends something to the House. And somewhere along the line, legislators maybe told Pritzker they were supporting him. Then they got in the caucus and said they weren't. If Welch had called the bill, it would have passed because there was Republican support. Now I don't know where they are. There's clearly a disconnect between the two, and it'll be I imagine we will see the two of them side by side in the coming days of the session, and we hope they will talk and get on the same page. Welch has said that he's fully supports Pritzker and is going to be, an ally in going forward in the session, but there's clearly a, it's a different tenor than it was in the past 4 years between the two of them.
And Charlie, it's nothing new to see this type of thing play out once in a while, some differences of opinion, maybe some hurt feelings on one side. Certainly with Speaker Madigan, we saw that at times. He didn't always get along well with governors. So do you read much into this?
No, I think in a sense it was a matter of miscommunication. Welch had no intention of calling that hemp bill because of his membership, who had told him that we're not going to support it. And he has this rule that unless he has 60 of his 78 people on board, he won't let a bill go to the floor and have a vote on it. And so he did not have those. And he should have, in my judgment, he should have told the governor, look, I don't have the support in the caucus for this to go forward. We're not going to pass it. Just giving you a heads up here so you don't get out in front and pushing for it and making it look like you're getting stiffed here. So I think it was a failure of communication, primarily on the speaker's part. But I think it's not going to lead to any long-range difficulties, because basically they support the same things. And so they're going to have to work together. And Welch is rightfully protecting the legislative branch of government, so to speak, which is something Michael Madigan was famous for. You talk about problems with governors. Look at what Madigan and Rauner went through. Look at what Madigan and Blagojevich went through. So this is just a minor dust up, and it'll all be forgotten as we move forward in the legislative session.
I don't think it'll be forgotten, but I have to wonder, will JB be so quick to give money to different campaigns of the folks that went against him on this, including Speaker Welch? I think it'll be interesting to watch how that plays out. And maybe it's because I like the drama. I don't know.
Well, what about the mayor of Chicago? There seems to also be, at least from the governor's side, there seems to be some questions of how well they're getting along or if they're even talking much.
Yeah, that's a bigger tension point, I think. The mayor has often said, you know, when talking about issues that, you know, we are, you know, in close contact with the governor's office and constant communication. And then I kept hearing that maybe that wasn't the case. So when I asked the question the other day, I was surprised at, you know, that the governor was so forthright about the fact that, you know, frankly, we haven't talked, you know, more than a handful of times in the past 2 years, which I thought was stunning, given that the Democratic National Convention was here in Chicago, you know, last year. You would have thought that the two of them would have been on the phone, you know, every week talking about it, but apparently that was not the case. So that indicates that there is tension between the two of them. I do think it's already shifted because the mayor has been sending people just in, you know, the past week or so, 10 days, to Springfield to maybe build bridges. Maybe the mayor was relying too much on his previous relationship with Don Harmon, thinking it didn't matter if he talked to Pritzker because he had worked for Harmon. You know, I don't know. I think it is shifting a little bit. So it has to, because there are a lot of things Chicago needs and wants. And in order to get that, you have to have good communication with legislators and the governor's office to make it happen.
Yeah, Charlie, there's a lot of territorialism that goes on, it seems, between the people in the legislature or the governor, and then, of course, the mayor of Chicago. And for somebody like Brandon Johnson, who's a political newcomer and has made some missteps along the way, I guess it's not surprising to see him not realize exactly what those dynamics are. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's true. And the fact that he's counting on his past relationship with the Senate president and with some of the members in the House to kind of have Chicago bailed out by the legislature, that's not going to happen. And as a matter of fact, Rick Pearson, the Trib, had a story the other day where he talked to Welch, and here's what Welch's quote was: "You've got to be honest with them, and they're going to hear no a lot. Chicago is important to the state. We've got to help them where we can. Where that is, I don't know. I'm looking forward to hearing from the mayor and his team identifying what their priorities are. We haven't heard that yet, but I anticipate we will." So that's kind of reflects what you said about the Welch people really, not the Welch people, but Johnson's people, maybe not understanding how you work the General Assembly, how you have to be down here on a daily basis. You have to have a constant presence, and you don't just do news conferences, but you also go out to dinner with people, you go out drinking with them, you build up those personal relationships that you can forward your agenda. But when the mayor expects the state to come up with a ton of money, like the speaker told Pearson, that ain't going to happen.
And Johnson's at a very important time here, it seems to me, Shia, that the fact that a lot of people are starting to look a couple of years out, maybe I'm going to make a run for that office. Maybe that's something I want to do. And there's a lot of people who are eyeing a run for Chicago mayor. So he does have to have some success this year, has to have a better year than he's had, maybe either of the first two that he's been in office, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are people who are seeing a lot of what he's done as stumbles. I think the mayor sees that he's initiating the agenda he wanted to initiate, a progressive agenda where, you know, it is focused on education. And that costs a lot of money. And so at some point, you know, the rubber meets the road, so to speak, and maybe they'll have to pull back. But maybe his thinking is you just keep pushing and pushing until maybe you get something out of it. So I keep thinking, you know, I want to wait until this session is over to see, you know, what the city might get out of the session. And that will be, I think, a bigger determiner of what happens going forward in his, you know, facing competition from challengers.
Well, you mentioned that the Democrats are having trouble getting along at times, and also Republicans, nothing new there either. They're having some troubles, especially in the House Republican caucus. Tony McCombie is the House Republican leader, and again, in a super minority, but she's facing criticism from some of her members. She's also facing a lawsuit from a former candidate who ran statewide, Tom DeVore. What's going on that in that caucus at this point?
To be a Republican in the General Assembly must be so difficult right now. I mean, it's hard enough trying to get your voice out when the Democrats control everything with a supermajority. And then you've got to deal with, you know, people within your party, you know, arguing, saying that you're too far left, you're too, you know. So somebody like McCombie, who is measured, who is trying to keep her party together, just like Kathy Salvey is for the larger Republican Party, both of them, they have a challenge in that they've got a right wing, I hope I can say that, a right-leaning part of the party that is constantly poking at them for one thing or another. And that's where Tom DeVore comes in. He was on, you know, made comments on Facebook McCombie thought went too far, deleted comments or blocked him. And you can't do that if you're an elected official, if it's an official page. I think there's a question on whether her page is an official page or not, or that. And now he's filed suit. So we'll find out, I guess, what the specifics are on that. It just seems, there are two things at play. One, social media is just gross. And, you know, it's unfortunate that you have to deal with a lot of people poking at you on social media, and you can't always respond the way you want. And then the other is that this party is struggling right now to stay cohesive, and we're seeing that.
Always plenty of drama when it comes to the legislature and politics in Illinois. Just a few minutes here left. Charlie, real quick, some legislation has been filed. This would decriminalize prostitution in the state of Illinois, and a lot of people think this is a good way to go. What's your thoughts on this piece of legislation?
Well, my guess is that it's probably not going to pass because it's going to be offensive to a whole lot of people. Basically, what it would do, it would remove any criminal penalties involved with consensual sexual work and would allow sex workers to vet their clients and allow them to report abuse or sex trafficking without fear of prosecution or stigma, according to the news release. And the sponsor in the House is Representative Will Gazzardi, who's a Chicago Democrat. He said the measure will also include a Bill of Rights with basic protections similar to Illinois Bill of Rights for domestic workers. And he kind of liked it. Well, sex work is like any other work. You know, if you're a Uber driver, you hire your car out to take people places. If you're Instacart, you hire yourself out to pick up groceries for people and deliver them home. If you're a sex worker, you hire your body out for people who want to use it, that kind of thing. And I'm not sure that that's going to be all that popular. As a matter of fact, the Illinois Family Institute, which is a nonprofit that advocates for public policy based on the Bible, the their director David Smith said, "Let's not sanitize it. What are we talking about here? Legalizing brothels throughout the city of Chicago, throughout the state of Illinois? Is that what our main streets are going to look like? The weed shop next to the brothel, next to the mini casino? This is the new wave of Illinois." And I think that sentiment is going to be shared by a lot of lawmakers. They're not ready to go the full route.
And Shia, I understand, and just quickly here, just a few seconds left, but I understand what they're trying to do here. But a lot of people fall into this line of work because they either have to, some circumstances could be some addiction that puts them there, and getting out of it can be really hard, especially once you have a criminal record. So I understand what they're trying to do, but do you think this has any chance of getting much traction?
I wonder if... I agree with Charlie, it might not get out this time, but I wonder if it's the kind of measure that, you know, is going to take a while to get people used to it. And then, you know, in another session, maybe we'll see, you know, see it adjusted and tweaked and it will go through. I don't know. It is a Democratic controlled, you know, General Assembly. So who knows, maybe it will get through.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. Shia, I'll start with you.
Well, I was really excited to write today in the newsletter about just the backstory of the Martin Luther King Day mayor's breakfast that happened this morning, and how it started when Mayor Daley got a little jealous that the Rainbow Push breakfast was so popular, and it was full of lots of pastors, black pastors. And it came at a time when Daley was really looking for black support. And so he started his own breakfast, and it was pretty controversial because a lot of people saw through it that it was just politics. But eventually, you know, it became a thing, and now it's tradition. And here we have Mayor Johnson holding his own breakfast today. So it was a fun story to write.
And Charlie.
The Illinois State Board of Education this week approved a budget for the coming fiscal year of roughly $11.4 billion, which is a 4.6% increase over the current budget. They include a $350 million increase in the evidence-based funding line, which is the minimum annual increase, and also a $142 million increase in mandatory categorical aid that covers things such as transportation and special ed, and $75 million in new funding for early childhood education. And this money is used to help fund the budgets of more than 850 school districts serving almost 2 million students. And since the evidence-based funding formula law went into effect back in 2017, nearly $2.2 billion has been distributed. Overall funding for the neediest districts has grown from 59% of the adequacy target to 73%. But to bring all school districts up to 90% of their adequacy target would require an additional $2.6 billion. And that is not going to happen, considering that we're looking at a projected $3.2 billion budget shortfall in the coming fiscal year.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Shia Kappas. And she is the national political reporter with Politico and author of the Illinois Playbook. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.